All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to I Am That. And tonight, we're going to look at a message that we started last week, Consciousness and the Absolute. And then the message is dated November 18th, 1980. And I'm on page 14. What I'll do is start with the first paragraph at the top of the page. We got a little further than that, but just to kind of bring us back to where we were last week. So, those who come here with the idea of getting knowledge, even spiritual knowledge, come here as individuals aspiring to get something. That is the real difficulty. The seeker must disappear. And we talked about that paragraph last week, but last night I was unable to sleep. It doesn't happen to me very often, but it did last night. And so someone had sent me recently a 3-hour video of Bernadette Roberts, and I'd never, you know, heard her speak or anything before. So since I was laying in bed wide awake anyway, I decided to listen to at least a portion of that. And it's interesting because one of the things she talked about is in the egoic state, we can't help but think about getting for the self. And so even the spiritual path is still seeking for the self. And that's what Nisargadatta is saying here, that's a problem. And you can see how that's a problem if the self is what has to be let go of. Right? You can't be trying to get for the self and let go of the self too. So at some point, there needs to be a shift in why you're doing this. You know, there's some, I don't know how to describe this shift. I've heard other people talk about it in different ways. But, you know, for me at this point, there's just this understanding. I have finally accepted that this is a process of letting go of the self, not getting the self. And that's a shift. Right. So that's what he's talking about in this particular paragraph. He says, when you know your real nature, the knowledge I am remains, but that knowledge is unlimited. I mentioned last week, I don't know what he means by that sentence. I see two possibilities, and I really don't know what he means. One possibility is that once you awaken to the first principle of God, the I am presence is still there. It's still something you're aware of, but you're just not identified with it anymore. And that reminds me of something Ramana Maharshi said when Ramana Maharshi was dying of sarcoma. He would ask people to move him carefully when they moved him from like the meditation room to his bedroom. And someone asked him if he was in pain. And he made a comment that was something like, there was an awareness of the body, but it was an awareness as if in a dream. You know, so it seemed like he was trying to communicate that he had an awareness of the body, but it wasn't the same kind of awareness that we may have with the body. So one possibility for the meaning of the sentence is that when you awaken to your real nature, this awareness of the I am remains, right? But yet you're aware of your unlimited nature. But there's another possibility here too. The other possibility is Ramana Maharshi, as he talks about the absolute, he still calls the absolute I. He says it's the true I, right? It's not like he says only the ego says I, right? He still uses the word I. So the other possibility here is that the meaning of I am for Nisargadatta shifted. Now instead of I am being this limited thing, now I am is this unlimited thing, right? So that's another possibility for the sentence. And that even makes the most sense because listen to the sentence. When you know your real nature, the knowledge I am remains, but that knowledge is unlimited. right? So it sounds like the meaning of the words shift, right? But as I said last week, if we really want to find out what he means by that, we have to follow in his footsteps and find out for ourselves. Other than that, it's just conjecture, isn't it? He said, it is not possible for you to acquire knowledge. You are knowledge, right? You are the I am. You are pure consciousness. You are existence. You're not trying to acquire anything. You're trying to realize what you are. He says, you are what you are seeking. And that's where we left off last week. So that was kind of a review. So I'll jump into the new material now. Your true being exists prior to the arising of any concept. And although we identify with our thoughts, we know this is true too. You know, we may not have a memory of being, you know, an infant, a little bitty baby, you know, a week old, two weeks old, but we know that we were, right? And we also know that when we were a week old or 2 weeks old, we didn't know any language. Therefore, we didn't have any concepts. And yet we clearly existed, right? So we know that our being existed, even the physical being existed prior to concepts. We know concepts are learned. We know concepts are acquired. We know we cannot be the concepts, and yet we still ignorantly identify with them. Your true being exists prior to the arising of any concept. Can you, as an object, understand something that existed prior to the arising of a concept? Now, that's an interesting question, because he doesn't just say, can you understand something? He says, can you, as an object, understand something that existed prior to the arising of a concept? Well, again, I'm not 100% certain what he means here, so I'll just start off by being honest about that. But what occurs to me when he says, can you, as an object, what occurs to me is what he's really doing is saying the mind, right? Not the awareness, the mind. Can you, as an object, can you, the mind, possibly understand what came before you? You know, when I came into the sanctuary tonight and I turned on my chat board, the very first thing I saw was "Welcome back, Regina." But I know that there were words typed on the chat board before I came in. But I don't have access to those words. I can't know what was here before I showed up. Well, it's the same thing with the mind. The mind can't know what was here before it showed up, which means the mind can't know our true nature, our true being. And of course, this is what step one in the seven steps to awakening was all about, that you can't actually get there through mind. Now, mind can be a helpful tool along the way, like we use the mind to practice inquiry. We use the mind to talk ourselves into sitting down and meditating, right? So it's not like the mind is not in some ways helpful. But ultimately, when we realize what we were prior to the mind, we're realizing that with our true nature, with our awareness, not with the mind. The mind can't know what's prior to it. So again, can you, as an object, understand something that existed prior to the arising of a concept? In the absence of consciousness, is there any proof of the existence of anything? Consciousness itself is mind, is thought, is all phenomena, all manifestation. Now, what this reminds me of is what Bernadette Roberts said to us on Sunday night, which we'll look at again next Sunday. Do I have Bernadette with me? Yeah, hold on one second. I just want to read this one sentence from Bernadette. One sentence is all, but it was the opening sentence. on Sunday night. Now, here again, if you weren't listening to the other night when I was teaching Bernadette, when she says true nature of self, she's talking about what is the ego really, you know, or what is consciousness really. She's not talking about the true nature of the true self, which is how we usually hear that. But she says, no one knows the true nature of self as long as he is living it, or is it? The true nature of self can be disclosed only when it falls away and becomes known in retrospect by absence or what was. So she's saying while we're identified with the false self or while we're identified with consciousness, we can't fully understand what the false self is if that's what we're identified with. And if we're identified with consciousness, we can't fully understand what it is. When we transcend the egoic way of living, then we can understand what really the ego was. And when we transcend consciousness, then we can understand what consciousness really was. But as long as we're in it, we can't. Well, that seems to be very similar to what Nisargadatta is saying here. He says, in the absence of consciousness, is there any proof of the existence of anything? And then he says, consciousness itself is mind, is thought, is all phenomena, all manifestation. And this is right after asking, can you as an object understand something that existed prior to the arising of a concept? So he seems to be telling us just what she did. As long as we're in it, we can't understand it. He says, apprehending this is being dead to the I am body while alive. So he's telling us that when you understand consciousness, then the I am body thought or the I am body belief and the I am body experience is dead to you, right? When you have awakened beyond consciousness and you understand what consciousness was, you can look back and see what consciousness was, at that point, you do not think you're the body. In fact, you know, there's always that famous discussion where that one young man said to Nisargadatta when he was talking about how there's no world and he's not a body and all that stuff. And the young man said, but I see you sitting there smoking. Right? And Nisargadatta says to him, that's your I am the body belief, right? And, of course, there was that other conversation where a man asked him, do you mean to tell me that you are unaware of having a body? And Nisargadatta says something like, no, I am completely aware that I don't have a body, right? So what this really means is, as long as we perceive ourselves as a body, we don't have a full understanding of what ego is. Therefore, we don't have a full understanding of how it's driving us. Obviously, we get some understanding and we drop, you know, some beliefs and some habits as such, but the majority of what the ego is unconscious to us as long as we're still identified with it. And then the same thing is true when you awaken to consciousness. You can't fully understand what consciousness is while you're identified with consciousness as what you are. The majority of that experience of seeing yourself as consciousness is unconscious. But when you awaken beyond it, then you see what that was. So with mind, you cannot understand ego. And with consciousness, you cannot understand consciousness. You have to transcend a thing and look back. It kind of reminds me of the saying, hindsight is 20/20, right? He says, again, apprehending this, knowing what consciousness is being dead to I am the body while alive. This kind of knowledge comes only in a rare case and is a very elusive kind of knowledge where no effort is necessary. In fact, effort itself is a hindrance. It is intuitive understanding. So the first thing that stands out to me is he also says that it is a rare case for someone to awaken beyond consciousness and to no longer perceive themselves as a body. And I, the reason I point that out is because so many people nowadays say that, you know, thousands and thousands of people are awakening. And I think that I've always thought that the thousands and thousands of people are awakening are having shifts. But a shift is not necessarily the same thing as awakening. You know, like if we were to bring back Dr. Jeffrey Martin's continuum, you know, they may be shifting into location one or location two, possibly even location three, but they're not beyond consciousness, right? And so thousands of people, and actually I also think that if you take the 7.5 billion or however many people it is now and divide it by, I don't know, let's say 5,000, I think you're going to find that even that's kind of rare. Even if there's 5,000 people awakened to these lower levels on a continuum, overall that's rare. But when you look at the number of people that awaken to the higher levels of the continuum, awaken beyond consciousness, beyond the unitive state, that's extremely rare. And I have a theory for why that is. My theory is it's rare because most of us don't really want to awaken that far. Right? That's just the bottom line. Some of us don't even want to awaken beyond the ego. In spite of how much we may hate the person we are, we also love the person we are. We're quite attached to the person we are. We're quite attached to our lives. We're quite attached to our problems. We're attached to all of it. Some people want what Dr. Jeffrey Martin and Bernadette Roberts described as the highest potential for a human, which is the unitive state. And that's really what we want. And I was listening to Bernadette last night while laying awake, and I can't remember her exact words. I wish I could. First of all, she's delightful to listen to. She's got such a cute, enthusiastic voice. But basically, she, you know, and she, of course, has already awakened beyond the unitive state while she's talking, but she's describing that experience. And she really describes it as just like this wonderful experience, you know, like, you know, why would you want anything else? And yet she still woke beyond it. But, you know, she's just describing it. This is the bliss state right here, this location three. So many people may want to awaken to that unitive state and not go any further. Some may not even want to go that far. So I suspect that the reason this awakening completely beyond consciousness is rare is because we really don't want it. And I think that's okay. But I think that the flip side of that is also interesting. The flip side of that is if you really do want it, and you really do apply yourself to it, it's possible. And people like Nisargadatta prove that. You know, Nisargadatta awakened to it in 3 years because he wanted it and he applied himself fully to it, right? So again, it's just always to me interesting to contemplate what do I want and do it genuinely. You know, nobody's here telling you you have to awaken or you have to awaken to a certain level. You know, what do I want? And apply yourself to that. I was sharing today during the Tao Te Ching teaching a little line that got written in my journal that I really love. However, I can hardly remember. I remember the gist of it, but not the exact words. I'm really good now at remembering things without words. Like, it's like I can remember a thought, but I can't remember the words that go with the thought. It's not like I've forgotten it. I just can't remember the language. But the idea was, live what you want or get what you live. Right? That, I think those were the words. Live what you want or get what you live. So what this is really saying is that what we receive, or if we're talking about awakening, maybe the word is what we attain. I don't know what word to use with that. really depends on how we genuinely apply ourselves. You know, to say that you want to awaken beyond the ego, but to only give a few minutes a day to that and then give the whole rest of your day to your ego. You know, live what you want or get what you live. You know, that really means that you still want the egoic existence, and that's okay. If you want to go beyond the egoic existence, if you genuinely want to go beyond the egoic existence, then you are going to genuinely apply yourself in that way. At the last retreat here, on the first day, I only had ladies. We did have a man join us on the second day. His plane was late. He and his wife were both late. But on the first day, we only had ladies. And we were talking about this thing about if you really, really want something, you apply yourself to it. And I said, can you think of something in this lifetime that you really wanted and you just fully applied yourself to it? You never once forgot you wanted it. You didn't take breaks from applying yourself to it. And it was really interesting. I don't know if this is just a female thing or what. Every single woman that happened to be in that room said yes, having children. And interestingly, we had enough people in the room who couldn't just get pregnant and have children. You know, there were people who went through fertility things. You know, I went through an adoption process. You know, it seemed like every woman that was there put effort into having a child. But, you know, what they understood from that was I really, really, really wanted a child. And so I really applied myself until that happened. And so the question becomes, well, remember how much you wanted that child when you didn't have it. Do you want awakening that much? You see? Are you applying yourself to awakening in the same way that you applied yourself to having a child? Or in my case, getting a child. And when the man came the next day, you know, we asked him the question. For him, it was a little different. He had wanted a particular master's degree, right? He wanted an education achievement. But the same thing, he could remember how much he wanted it. He could remember how driven he was to get it. He didn't forget to do the studying or, you know what I mean? Right? And so apply it. Remember how much you wanted that master's degree. Or if you were an Olympic athlete, I would ask you, remember how much you wanted that gold medal or just to get into the Olympic team. And think about everything you did to apply yourself. Do you want awakening that much? And I think we can probably see pretty easily why awakening beyond consciousness is rare. It's not that it's unachievable. It's that we don't want it. Or if we do, we need to contemplate that. Do I want it? Do I want to apply myself in the same way I've applied myself to other things that I wanted and achieved? You know, every woman in that room, even though they all had challenges having children, guess what they all ended up with? Children. And of course, the man ended up with his master's degree. So we know how to apply ourselves to things we really want and achieve them. The question becomes, what do I want? So now what's interesting here in the very same, we only have 2 minutes left. I don't know if I can address it in 2 minutes. In the very same sentence, he says, this kind of knowledge comes only in a rare case and is a very elusive kind of knowledge where no effort is necessary. In fact, effort itself is a hindrance. It is an intuitive understanding. And that to me is a very funny sentence because I understand it. Like, to some degree, there's what we would call effort. I mean, it takes effort to sit down and to close your eyes and to get your mind to a point where you're not just sitting there staring at your thoughts, right? But once you get to that point, the efforting has to stop. Then it becomes being, right? Or abiding. You know, it's like you have to effort to get, it's almost like you're swimming out past some waves, but once you get out past those waves, you float on the ocean, right? And at that point, you have to become as little, as less as you can be. And so if you were applying any effort at that point, you wouldn't be coming as little and as less as you can be. You would still be remaining kind of big and in yourself, right? So, you know, we've heard people refer to it as effortless effort, because to say no effort at all, well, that doesn't mean just sitting here and closing my eyes and then thinking all day, right? I mean, I have to swim past those waves and get out into that ocean. But once I get out into that ocean, then the effort ceases. I roll over on my back and I just float and I let the ocean carry me from that point, right? And then, of course, he says, the last sentence for today, we're not done with the message yet, but the last sentence for today, he says, this knowledge is an intuitive understanding. And I think intuitive is just the best word that you can put on it. Because what you're really saying is it's not a mental understanding, right? It's an understanding, and it's not a mental understanding. So people call it intuitive, but I think that's just a best word that's picked. I think that another word that might be really good is that it's an inherent understanding. It's a built-in understanding that you finally reach or remember or realize again. Right? And so what I'm going to do is mark this so that next week we can begin. We only covered one paragraph today, but that's okay. We're not running any races, are we? So we'll begin next week with the next question, and we'll continue forward. And I want to thank you guys for putting up with me as I explore these deep teachings. You know, I mean, really, how friggin' lucky am I to have, you know, at least a few people who come here and sit there and just be present for me so that I can apply myself to these very deep teachings and allow clarity to arise because that's important to me. I mean, you guys are really great friends, and I want to say thank you. Don't know what I'd do without you. All right. Good night, everyone.